for argument, United States versus Woodard. Miss Tinglin?
Yes. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Karen Tinglin, and I represent the defendant in this case, McQuilly Woodard. The primary issue that I would like to discuss this morning is the premise that where the government refuses to accept the defendant's guilty plea, insisting that the defendant instead plead to a greater offense, which the jury determines is unsupported by the evidence, the defendant is then entitled to an acceptance of responsibility reduction in the interest of fundamental fairness. In this case, Woodard was charged with possession with intent to distribute more than 5 and less than 50 grams of cocaine-based crack. The specific amount in the indictment was 12.32 grams. It is significant that after reviewing all of the evidence at trial, the jury found Woodard guilty of possession with intent to distribute only 0.61 grams of crack cocaine, which is the precise offense to which Woodard initially attempted to plead. The record shows that Woodard did, in fact, timely notify the government of his intention to plead guilty of the crime for which he was eventually convicted, that being the possession with intent to deliver 0.61 grams of crack cocaine, but the government refused to accept Woodard's guilty plea unless Woodard agreed to admit guilt for an additional 11.71 grams of crack cocaine. Woodard's trial attorney documented...
I'm not sure I understand this. Not the government's choice. If the defendant simply enters a blind plea of guilty to the charge, the prosecutor can't say no. So this must have been something other than a straight plea.
This was specifically a plea to the lesser amount, the 0.61 grams.
Right, well, but then it was not a plea to the charge. Right, what your client proposed to do was plead guilty to some lesser included offense.
Correct. And Woodard's trial attorney did document Woodard's intention to plead to the lesser offense in correspondence dated September 25th, 2002, November 27th, 2002, January 8th, and January 10th of 2003. Woodard is entitled to a two-level reduction in offense level on the basis of acceptance of responsibility because he did offer to plead guilty. It was the government, in fact, who declined the plea offer and who decided to press forward with the trial. The government has conceded in its response brief that, as a general principle, a defendant's exercise of his right to trial does not absolutely preclude an acceptance of a responsibility reduction. Woodard, in fact, only went to trial because the government forced him to do so by refusing his plea offer. It is not as if Woodard refused to plead guilty to either the greater offense or the lesser offense. Rather, here, Woodard instead maintained all along that he was guilty of the lesser offense, but only the lesser offense. And despite the government's efforts to force the greater offense on him, the jury actually agreed with Woodard and believed Woodard, finding him guilty only of the lesser offense. This is somewhat similar to the Rule 68 offer of judgment in the civil context, where if the judgment finally obtained by the offeree is not more favorable than the offer that was rejected, then the offeree must pay the costs incurred after the offer was made. It makes sense, then, in this context, that the penalty for the government should be the reduction for acceptance of responsibility. If the government forces a defendant to go to trial by refusing the only reasonable plea offer, the reduction should apply. And this is a fair consequence of the government failing to adequately assess its case. It's simply not fair to penalize the defendant for the government's failure to meet its burden of proof and to be realistic about the strength of the evidence in the case. It is problematic and also disturbing that in this case, at every turn, the government has attempted to hold Woodard accountable for conduct which was specifically rejected by the jury. It seems to be, in fact, an underlying theme of the government's case. The court's willingness to acquiesce to this scheme is clear error. The government had the burden of proof in this case, and the government failed to prove that Woodard possessed and had the intent to distribute more than 0.61 grams of crack cocaine.
Was an Apprendi argument made in the district court?
In the district court?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe so. We did make that argument on appeal. The Apprendi argument, according to the government, does not apply because of the career offender status. And although it does not change the outcome of the case, we're contending that it is relevant because it goes to the mindset of both the government and the trial court to consistently try to add in the additional 11.71 grams of crack cocaine as relevant conduct, which it was rejected by the jury.
Well, when you say goes to the mindset, did it affect the placement within the range under the guidelines?
It did not affect the placement in the range. However,
is there anything that concretely affects the sentence other than the career offender finding?
Well, the reduction of the acceptance of responsibility, which was denied by the court, would affect the actual placement and would affect the actual sentence. In addition, we have argued that Woodard's criminal history category significantly overrepresents the seriousness of his criminal record or the likelihood that he
will... I don't understand how that is tenable in a career offender case, because it's just an automatic specification at level 6.
Correct, Your Honor, but...
Is it permitted to do anything other than that for a career offender?
What we're asking is that the court looks at this case as a whole, basically.
No, I'm asking a legal question. I think this argument has been made and rejected before, although I can't put my finger on it just at the moment. But there's both a statute and a guideline saying that career offenders must be placed in criminal history category 6. Is there any case that says the judge may choose any other criminal history category?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
Indeed, one of the things that puzzles me about the possibility of applying Booker to a case like this is whether in a career offender, whether after a career offender finding it could do any good. There's a statute, it's 28 U.S.C. 994H, which says that career offenders must be sentenced at or near the statutory maximum. And that statute is not affected by Booker.
Correct.
That suggests that for career offender cases, the judge really still doesn't have much discretion, unless, of course, Almendarez-Torres were to be overruled, which is not within our power.
But the judge did have discretion to apply the reduction for acceptance of responsibility, which he did not.
Mm-hmm.
Want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Tingler. Mr. Holler?
Thank you, Your Honor. David Holler for the government. May it please the court. Counsel for Mr. Woodard began with the acceptance of responsibility issue, and we believe that on that issue the record is clear that Mr. Woodard at trial denied any guilt in this offense at all. He claims that he wanted to plead guilty to the lesser intent of possession with intent to distribute less than 5 grams of crack cocaine, but at trial he asked his counsel, who is not Ms. Tinglin, who is not counsel here, asked for an acquittal, stated that the only evidence in the record was that the defendant possessed 0.61 grams, but not that he possessed it with intent to distribute, and that's an element of even of the lesser included offense. So based on those statements at trial, we believe that he was denying at trial his acceptance of responsibility even for that offense. He also repeatedly denied his relevant conduct, which the district court did find, his responsibility for the additional 11.71 0.7 grams of crack cocaine that was found in the hotel room and not just the 0.61 grams. So because intent to distribute is obviously an element of the possession with intent to distribute offense, and that's what he was found guilty of by the jury, he has not accepted responsibility under 3E1.1. In any event, this court has applied a clear error standard, and assuming that post-Booker that standard still applies to these sorts of determinations, we don't believe that the district court's finding on both of those points was clear error. So there was no need for acceptance of responsibility.
I'm just curious about doesn't really have much to do with the legal issues here, but 0.61 grams is a thimble full of something, and
it's a very small amount.
Pretty small amount. What would this guy? He got 17 and a half years here in federal court. If the Fort Wayne, it was all Fort Wayne police that were involved here.
Yes, sure.
And this kind of haggling over, was it $150 or $300? It was a pretty penny ante drug case, I think. What would happen to this fella if the Fort Wayne police would have just taken him to the state court and he would have gone through that system? And why is this a federal?
Well, he was charged with the 11.7 grams, Your Honor. And mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know if it's fair to start with the jury's verdict and go from there. Under our guidelines, we would not have taken a 0.61 gram case federally if that was all that was at stake. But 11.7 grams in Fort Wayne, Indiana, it's the lowest crime part of our district. We do tend to take lower drug quantity cases there than we would in Northwest Indiana, or probably than they would in Chicago. And this
not
was a defendant.
Cool.
I mean, the defendant, even for 0.61.
This is an effort to drive drug dealers to Fort Wayne on the ground that they'll then fare better than they would elsewhere? Drive them to Chicago.
I guess we try to skim off the top of the most serious offenders in all parts of our district. I mean,
I don't understand. You'd think that if crime were concentrated in Chicago, say, well, Chicago's not Indiana, more than this, but if, say, crime is concentrated in Gary or something, that that's where you'd focus your resources and you'd allow the crime rate to rise in Fort Wayne if you could get a greater reduction in Gary, rather than assuming that the Fort Wayne people are entitled to a lower crime rate.
I guess that's true, Your Honor, on the other hand, there are certainly forces that if we were to remove all federal presence from Fort Wayne, that would drive it that way. This is a defendant who had 11.7...
It's not a question of removing all federal presence from Fort Wayne. It's a question of why you have a different threshold for federal prosecution in the two places. So suppose your threshold in Chicago is 5 grams, or suppose it's 10 grams in Fort Wayne, 20 grams in Gary. Well, why wouldn't you want to have, say, 20 grams uniformly or 18 grams uniformly? Yes, the crime rate would drift up in Fort Wayne, but it would come down in Gary.
I'm not really sure that I'm prepared to answer the questions of the policy decisions of our office, Your Honor.
I understand. It's interesting.
It is an interesting question, Your Honor. 11.7 grams of crack cocaine, though, for a career offender, as this person was, who even had he been found guilty of 0.6 grams, would still have been at a base offense level of 32. Repeat and recidivist offenders. Mr. Woodard had been out of jail for approximately 1 year.
How old is he?
I'd have to look, Your Honor. I don't know. He began committing criminal offenses around 89. I believe he's in his early 30s, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a valid exercise of prosecutorial discretion to pursue him regardless of the drug weight involved. He's someone who has repeatedly involved himself in criminal conduct. He was caught by the Fort Wayne police in this, and through the career offender statute, he can be given a greater
sentence. Put on ice for a long time.
But that's our position on acceptance. Mm-hmm. On the Sixth Amendment issue that was raised by counsel, the career offender statute is the statute that decided this, and as long as Almendarez-Torres remains on the books, this was not a Sixth Amendment violation. The only fact of consequence was the conviction of two prior burglary of dwelling convictions, and because of that, we do not believe that the Sixth Amendment, there was no Sixth Amendment problem at his sentencing, and we don't believe that the remand procedures are necessary in this case. Judge Lee
There was no Sixth Amendment problem given Almendarez-Torres, but of course Booker says that its new approach applies across the board.
It does say that, Your Honor. It's not clear. The end of the opinion
seems... Does the Department of Justice have a position on what should be happening to these cases where there was no Sixth Amendment violation, but were the judge to sentence now, there would be additional discretion? So far as I can see, our seven districts are telling us completely different things. One of your other districts earlier today, I think it was our second case, conceded that that should be remanded under Palladino. You're denying it.
Yes, we are both representing
the same client. Which of you is correctly articulating the position of the Department of Justice? Because it can't be both of you.
Well, I have sent an email to the department and didn't receive a response back. I think we are overwhelmed by the issues. I can't make an excuse for that, Your Honor. I'm just telling you what the facts are. I think that the standard, you know, obviously we're still sorting through the standard, and we still, I guess, are asserting that the position of the 11th, 1st, and 5th circuits is correct, and that...
That's not this question.
Well, I think there's still the question of whether the standard should be different for cases where there's a Sixth Amendment violation or not.
Yeah.
That is the question on which I would like to hear the position of the Department of Justice, right? Rather than having it talk out of both sides of its mouth, depending on which district is here. What is the position of the Department of Justice?
I can't, as I said to you earlier,
Would you kindly find out and tell us?
I will do the best that I can, and I may have a response waiting for me. But I don't know it this morning, Your Honor. I mean, I would say, stating here, that in the case where there is not a Sixth Amendment violation,
that's your position. The position of other U.S. attorneys is otherwise. That's why we need this resolved.
Well, I mean, I think it's clear from what I do know from the department. There was not a Sixth Amendment error here. Now, whether there was a Booker error because we are now reading the statute to be non-mandatory, there is a statutory error, assuming that what happened on January 12th was a correct reading of the statute, and that what Justice Breyer's opinion
was... It's not a reading of the statute. The Supreme Court severed two parts of the statute to avoid unconstitutionality.
Right. I know that they did.
Please proceed. I'm really not interested in your personal views. I'm interested in the institutional views of the United States executive branch.
Yes, Your Honor. On the downward departure issue, the defendant did assert numerous grounds for downward departure. He did not assert overrepresentation of criminal history, but we don't believe that his criminal history is overrepresented. He would have been a criminal history category 5 even were it not for this. Section 4B1.1, Your Honor, does indicate that if there is significant overrepresentation of criminal history in a career offender case, the district court may depart down, but may not depart down lower than criminal history category 5. So, and I would think that would be reserved for a case where there were old convictions that had fallen off, or there was a case of a criminal history 1 or 2 that was getting raised, not from a 5 to a 6. So, in any event, I don't think that it was any kind of error for the district court to find that there wasn't a downward departure deserved here. Because the defendant didn't raise the specific ground, I don't believe that that should be a ground either. So, for all those reasons, this office at least is urging that the court affirmed this sentence.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Holler. Ms. Tinglin, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
Your Honors, I would just like to say in the time that I have remaining that the question that was brought up with respect to the amount of drugs, 0.61 grams, is a poignant question. In this case, Woodard was convicted only of 0.61 grams and ended up with a sentence of 210 months in prison. And he has stated that he did argue on the trial court level that his prior convictions that got him to the career offender status were the burglaries were more than 10 years ago. Or almost 10 years old. Neither burglary involved injury to any other person. And, of course, it is relevant that the amount of drugs was so small in this case. Now, this case began with a criminal confidential informant contacting the Fort Wayne Police Department, informing them that he could basically get Woodard. So in the interest of fairness and in the interest of justice, I would ask that you do remand this case for resentencing based on what we've argued.
Do you continue to represent him if it's sent back? I mean, he's gone through three lawyers already, and what happens?
I've actually been appointed by this court, so I don't know that I would be his representative on the lower court level.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Taylor, and thank you for accepting the
thank
appointment
you.
And representing the client. Next case for